What's going on, everybody? It's Big Bo here to give you our sponsors. We want to thank our first sponsor, the Harbor of Hope. It is Harbor of Hope's program statement is the goal of the agency to provide positive opportunities to all people it interacts with. Children should have the opportunity to heal and engage in a meaningful activities within the community and their families. Harbor of Hope, Inc. strives to make a safe environment for families and children and will take advantage of positive opportunities to support permanency goals and the overall well-being of the agency's clients. Harbor of Hope provides child care services and treatment services to male and female children from birth through 17 and up to 22 if they meet specific eligibility criteria for continued stay in their foster care program. It is the agency's goal that foster families create strong working relationships with all members of the treatment team. With that approach in mind, Harbor of Hope intends to create an environment for children that promotes healing and a healthy transition to permanency. Big fan of Harbor of Hope over there. Jamie is a great person. She does really good things. She's really getting the ball rolling up here in North Texas with her foster care system and adoption. So she believes that first responders, doctors, nurses, all those type of people will be great foster families just because of the values that we have and that we can instill in the kids. So if you have any questions or you're looking into being a foster parent or adoptive parent, just hit Jamie up at theharborofhope.org. You can also go to our website, streetwarriorradio.com. Check out our RSS feed, episode 013 with her, so you can hear a little bit more about her and her mission statement. You can also click theharborofhope.org link. It'll take you directly to their page. If you have questions and you're from out of state, she could help you with all that stuff too. Just give her a shout out. She's a good person. So that's our main sponsor. Our other sponsor is Top Notch Tactics. They gift us all this cool equipment that we have that we're coming live to you from. They will provide all security needs that you need in the North Texas area in the DFW. So if you're looking for them, you can go to info@streetwarriorradio.com. Put in the comment section or the subject line, Top Notch Tactics. Put your info in there and we'll get it over to those guys. And I also want to say you can go and do all your shopping. Christmas is right around the corner.
Yeah, it's coming.
Christmas coming. It's wintertime. I know that for sure. So listen, you're going to do all your shopping, right? And I do shopping on Amazon all the time for Christmas gifts. So all you have to do is go to streetwarriorradio.com, scroll down. You'll see the Amazon link. Click that. It's going to take you directly to your account, your page. Do all your shopping. The only thing that it is Amazon's going to give us a little percentage of what you bought. It's not going to cost you anything. You won't even know the difference. So that's one way to keep the podcast going. We ask that you support that. We also ask that you subscribe to Twitch. You can donate to us on Twitch, sort of like giving us a tip. Just little things like that. They help the podcast go. Make sure you subscribe, you like, you share, you comment, you tag your buddies. So our main sponsor is you guys, the fans, man. And we want to keep this thing going. We want to keep it rolling. We're doing some good things over here at Street Warrior Radio. So with all that, listen to the podcast. We got a good guest. JC, you want to tell them about the guest?
Yeah. So we have Mr. Jim Dexter from Tactically Sound Training Center. We had a great conversation with him about really focused on in firearms instructing and law enforcement perceptions with the public, et cetera. He's a really knowledgeable guy. He's works with Scott Jedi Jedlinski, who's been on the podcast a couple times. And, yeah.
Boom.
Good deal.
All right. Let's do it.
Cool.
Bah, bah, bah.
Cue the music.
Cue the music.
Jim.
Nice.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good man. Good.
All right. So for the people's out there, in the Street Warrior Nation. Can you give a little, just a little rundown of who you are real quick?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Jim Dexter. I'm a police officer in the suburbs of Chicago in Illinois, in the DuPage County area, not the Cook County area. Been a police officer for about 13 years now.
Awesome.
Was in the Army National Guard out of Chicago for 6 years. Got in 99, so pre-9/11. Did a couple of things then with the Guard. I was at O'Hare after 9/11, then went to Iraq 03, 04.
All right, start. Out,
got out. During that time, I was a student at my bachelor's degree. From there, I decided to leave my senior year at Western to take a job. I kept getting older, and all the candidates stayed 21 years old. And so I decided that I should probably get myself a career before I was much older than everybody else that I was competing against for a job. When I made that decision, the very next day, Madison, Wisconsin Police Department sent out an email that they would be testing on campus. So I said, hey, why not? I'll give it a shot. I'll go through the testing process and get my feet wet a little bit, and went through the process and got hired. And so I made the decision to leave a couple credits short. Went up to Madison, spent about 4 years there. At the time, I made the decision then that the Federal Air Marshal Service was hiring, mm-hmm. and that I would have an opportunity to move back to Chicago, where my family is at. They all still live in the same area now. And so I took that opportunity, left Madison, went to the Federal Air Marshal Service out of Chicago. I spent about 4 years there. During that period of time, I finished my bachelor's degree from Western. I went on to get my master's degree with the rest of my GI Bill money from American Military University. So I have a bachelor's degree in law enforcement and justice administration from Western Illinois, and a master's degree from American Military University in criminal justice.
Yeah.
I did the air marshal gig for about 4 years and realized that it wasn't really for me. It was a lot of travel. I was starting a family. I have a little one now. And so the tempo wasn't really conducive to what I wanted my personal life to be.
Sure.
And professionally, I just realized leaving the street and local law enforcement that that's really where I wanted to be. And so I made the decision while I was on our ground-based Viper team. I seized that opportunity to start interviewing places and made the decision to leave there. And went to my current department that I'm at now. I've been there 4 years now. I just went over the 4 year mark, and that's where I'm gonna be. That's where I'm gonna be now.
Yeah,
that's what's up.
So,
during that period of time, I lived kind of a dual first responder life, and that I was a volunteer firefighter as well. Mm. My dad's a retired deputy chief from the suburbs of Chicago. My brother's a part time firefighter where we grew up, where my dad retired as a deputy chief, and so for me, it was always kind of just part of my life. And so naturally, while I was down at school, I spent time serving with the Emma Chalmers Fire Department. And then while I lived in Wisconsin, I lived in Cottage Grove, Wisconsin, and served with their volunteer fire department for the period of time that I was there.
Sure.
Left when I moved back to Chicago, where everything is much more full-time. So I spent 4.5 years working as a volunteer emergency management officer with Hanover Township, the township that I live in, and left there after almost 5 years. I left there as their deputy chief.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jeez.
So I see y'all have a very relaxed beard policy.
Well, right now I'm currently recovering from an injury.
Oh, okay.
That I suffered back in the beginning of September.
I was about to say I'm impressed.
We do allow beards. We do allow beards, but within reason. This is definitely outside of reason.
Okay,
gotcha. So we do have a policy that allows beards. However, not in my current state.
Gotcha. Okay.
So for those of you who don't see me, it's currently quite bushy and full. And not street level law enforcement beardish.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous. At least you get one.
Yeah, we're gearing up for our No Shave November.
I'm not complaining.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah, we get our No Shave November once a year.
That's it. I can't wait.
Our chief just lifted the policy about 2 years ago and said, hey, don't abuse it. Keep it within reason. And everybody has kept it within reason because we all want it.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Have y'all adopted the tattoos visible policy, or is that still a misnomer?
It's kind of lax right now. We have a policy That says that they can't be visible. You know, I can't say whether it's completely strictly enforced or not.
Right.
Our chief is kind of the idea that he's not against it. Mm-hmm. There were previous policies in place, and I just don't think he's taken any official action to lift the policy.
Right.
At this point, so people are still following it, just out of respect for the policy.
Sure.
Not necessarily because it's strictly enforced. So,
gotcha.
But I do see that probably as a thing that if we were to seriously approach the chief about it, I would imagine that he would probably lift it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's, what would you say, five, six years down the road, I think you're going to see most departments are going to.
I think so too.
I mean, you know, we're doing all this other silly stuff to hug the community and act like we're real people. So. What difference does it make if we're going to, you know, come in and have a beard and some tattoos, as long as it doesn't affect our job function
I think it's relatable.
Yeah, it's definitely relatable. I mean, people are, you know, they have piercings like crazy, tattoos like crazy. It's all acceptable. So, yeah. I mean, eventually.
I can tell you, we have a big festival every year. And the first year that we had our beard policy, all of us with beards, immediately, all of the contacts that we had with the public were positive.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, obviously, I don't think anybody's going to walk up and say, I hate your beard, you shouldn't have it. But at the same time, the fact that people went out of their way to comment on our beards, and, you know, the fact that, oh, yeah, it's nice to see you guys, you know, kind of relaxed, but it clearly looks like you guys can still handle business. You know, it's kind of, it makes you look like real people and you know, just all the comments like that. Well, at the same time, you know, still retaining our full job function. And,
Sure.
You know, the silly comments that you hear from people about, like, oh, well, what do you need to put your gas mask on? When? In the middle of the domestic? You know?
Because,
I mean, it's on my hip like it is in the military.
I just don't quite understand. Like, it's back in my locker with my razor. And
right,
so,
yeah.
Like, if it's hit and that badly, then guess what? I'm gonna run back, shake. Take care and go to the bathroom, you know, grab a sandwich real quick, get my gas mask, and then be like, so what are we going to do now? Because we don't have a gas plan for street level law enforcement. So
exactly.
We'll call the riot control team that I'm not on, and I'll stand on the perimeter with my gas mask on. Like,
that's funny.
While being as sarcastic as possible. That's the goal right there.
Correct. Always.
Well, you know, it brings up an interesting point because you're not going to find very many people nowadays under the age of 30 that don't have tattoos and don't, you know, most guys have some sort of facial hair. And it's interesting to me how you have, admins that they still are just staunch on this kind of old school mindset and at the same time are so focused on community relations and making this, you know, community oriented policing, but yet don't take those aesthetic steps to relate to the generation that's coming up and the generation that they're not only policing, but are going to be joining and have joined the ranks of law enforcement.
Yeah. They're just kind of stuck on it. It's just a way, especially as we look at the changes currently right now in our profession. I think it's one of those things where it's almost attempting to keep a connection to some part of the way that the job used to be, whether it has any function at all. It's just a kind of way, I think, to just draw a line in the sand of, I'm an old dog. This was the way it was. You know, we creased our pants and they had four pockets and we shined our shoes. And despite the fact that it had some function to it, but things are much different now. I mean, there's definitely something about your appearance, but when you look at, you know, some uniform policies and things, adding two cargo pockets didn't make me look any less like I could handle the situation.
Right.
You know, there's definitely something to be said about in an appearance. You know, you look at, you know, historically state troopers, you know, iron uniforms, shine boots, and there gives that appearance of authority. But then, you know, you look at some of these guys who are hanging on to those notions and they can barely qualify and they don't know the current laws. They can't name one piece of current case law. And they simply get by an appearance and not an actual embracing of the job itself. They embrace the image rather than what it actually takes to do and be the job on the inside. And so I think there's some guys that are just holding on to that because they refuse to adapt with any other change within our profession. And so they kind of just stick to the appearance makes the man. And while that's part of it, I just don't think that aesthetic changes like that truly have that much of an impact on things.
Well, that being said, I think there's an argument to be had on functionality versus appearance, right? And the lack of functionality in a traditional police uniform. I base that off of, one, the medical issues that arise from traditional duty belts, traditional setups versus load-bearing vests, etc. The functionality of that and the fact that we carry more equipment than we ever have on our person to deal with a variety of situations, including now medical.
True. I think that just simply what we're asked to do now is every year we go on in this profession, we're asked to do more and more.
Yeah.
And our ability to be able to do that, especially at the patrol level. When you look at our active shooter response and now rapid deployment and the fact that now post-Columbine, we're not waiting anymore for SWAT. We're not staging for SWAT. We're going in. We have to be prepared for that. You look at now the evolution of that in rescue task force, providing medical aid to ensure the lowest loss of life possible, not just from stopping active killing, but from immediate first aid and establishing things like rescue task force teams to get them in. We continue to add tasks to our job, and we need to be able to implement them with the proper tools. I was in the gas station probably about a year ago, and we wear a lot of external vests and pants with all the pockets that we want.
Right.
And so I'm standing there having a cup of coffee with one of the other guys on my shift, and a lady just happens to walk in, and she looks at me and sees my kind of extra mags on my vest and the mags on my belt and my taser and various things. And she says, and she goes, "Oh, you must be a SWAT guy." Or she said, "You guys must be SWAT guys." I said, "Well, I am." The guy next to me wasn't. I said, "I am, but I'm not SWAT right now." She's like, "Oh, well, what do you need all that stuff for then?" I said, "Well, I'm expected to do as much right now, if not more, than when I get called out for SWAT."
Yeah, yeah.
Because I only have what I have on me right now. You know, when I woke up at, 2 o'clock in the morning, to go to a barricade situation, I got all the time in the world, man. I got my kit already prepared to go. If I want to add, subtract something,
right.
I have the luxury to do that. You know, you're a common patrol officer right now. When it kicks off, you're left with what you have.
Yeah.
And if you don't have it, you can't use it. And I think that as society expects more of us, I think administrations need to realize that we have to have the ability to implement and carry the tools in order to do that to be successful.
Yeah, I agree.
And not only that, but like both of you guys are firearms instructors, and I know that sometimes firearms instructors, they teach, well, do what's comfortable, there's basic fundamentals, but you need to be comfortable when you're shooting or when you're doing this.
Can't say that.
But, you can't be comfortable wearing your gear or, it's just, instead of wearing the outer vest to help you out, it's just like, nope, we're going to wear this type of vest because this is what we've always had.
Yeah, I mean, that phrase right there, it's what we've always done.
Yeah.
And nobody knows why. And when you present ideas or studies or statistics or anything to show the contrary, and it just gets shut down simply because, well, this is the way that we've always done it. I don't think there's a bigger barrier to progress other than just people who are just straight up no, Adnan, than the statement, that's how we've always done it.
Yep.
I don't understand.
It's the end all be all.
Well, I think there's other motivations behind it just besides that's the way we've always done it. I think that you look at certain admins, and this is just not a bash admin episode, but it could be, I guess. But if you look at a lot of mindsets in that particular function of law enforcement, administrative wise, I think there's this need to feed, or I don't want to say this, please the public, right? And I think there's a misconception that the majority of people are going to be upset if they see their police officers walking around their town and driving around their town with these vests on with all this stuff on it. And I think in reality, most people that support cops, most people that are behind us, want us to have all the tools that we can possibly have and all the training we can possibly have and all the things we can possibly have, because they know if they're in trouble, they want the best coming to help them out. And
agreed.
They want cops to be protected, because if they're not protected, who's going to protect them in a situation where they need to be protected? Yeah. And
yeah.
I think it's...
I agree. I mean,
yeah, and
we serve the public.
Right.
But this isn't Burger King where you're always going to have it your way.
Sure.
You know, and so I'll give you an example. We instituted a policy this year, or implemented a procedure this year, that at the gates or entrances to our festival, which is a kind of a one way in, one way out, where there could be possible vehicle traffic, but it's all shut down, the officers at each side of the gates had rifles visible.
Yeah.
As a deterrent. As we all stood there on our shift, I don't think that there was a gate shift that an officer didn't receive positive feedback from the community, from the people that were coming.
Yeah, people want that. People want to see that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was we get comments like, hey, you know, it's nice to see you guys prepared for that. It's sad that that's the way that things have to be.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's nice to see you guys in front of it and concerned about it and thinking about it. Thank you.
Yeah,
and I agree with that. You know, I think that the common person sees that and they have a tiny bit of sense of relief. But at the same time, there's that little bit of, yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of how it's got to be.
Right. That's the way it is. Yeah.
But they're prepared for it. And so when I go in here, I know that there are, at least in appearance, people that are going to come in and deal with the situation, and they're prepared for it, and they've thought about it. Whereas, you know, you just walk in and cops are just kind of sitting around. It doesn't kind of give you that warm feeling as we look at the news. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah. You said you guys wear external vests. Do y'all wear plates full time, or is it soft armor or what?
We're not placed full time. It's soft armor. We have the option to. I think some of the guys are wearing a new, I think it's a Safari Land carrier that has a pouch in the front. It's a zip.
Yeah, that's
right. And it has the ability to hold plates. And I know that guys were looking at plates and looking at the possibility of either going full time with them or at least having one kind of in the car that they can slip on real fast.
Right.
So there's definitely the thought of it. And the integrated plates, I know that Armor Express just came out with a new external carrier as well. They're one of their guys kind of local to us, the department in the city that I live in, actually just went to these carriers that has a top loading ability to throw a plate
right.
in. So I think the plate conversation and the either immediate access to plates or plates all the time.
Yeah, I think it's coming.
I think it's closely on the horizon.
I think it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Like our agency, Big Bo and I both work for the same agency, and we're in the early stages of implementing an exterior carrier program, and that Safari Land carrier that you're talking about, that's the one we're going with.
Okay.
And I like the reason we're going with it, the reason that I looked at it and pushed it was because of the fact that it's so modular, and the fact that you can put plates in. My plan is to put I'll wear plates.
Sure.
I'll wear plates because to me, you know, I work a day shift. Big Bo is a school resource officer, and you know we've got a lot of schools, and you know the possibility of that, you know, situation spinning out of control. I don't want to take the time to have to stop and throw something else on.
Sure.
I want to be able to have a system in place where I can wear that stuff full time and still be moderately comfortable.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you're talking about admin perception, it's kind of scary. I think for them, it's kind of scary when you're talking about an old school mindset, and then you got cops nowadays running around with, you know, these type of things, and considering cops wearing, you know, plates to stop rifle threats.
Yeah, you know,
and it's crazy. Still, it's a crazy, you know, thought, right?
Admin has to do their job.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, they have to be able to go in front of their city council, you know, their bosses, their managers, And they have to be able to sell these ideas. So that first off, it gets approval, it gets budget money, and so they can keep their job.
Right, yeah. No, sure, of course. Because there's some self-preservation involved. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When the mayor gets 15 phone calls when you switch to an external vest or your guys are suddenly wearing plates, and he feels 15 calls from, you know, from Fred and Myrtle saying, hey, why are the police going around, running around?
What the hell is this?
Military,
it's new age stuff.
Hard to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not an anti-Edmund guy. I understand.
No, and I'm not.
Understand both sides of the coin.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, as the line guy, I always want the best and the most efficient stuff and effective stuff to do my job. But at the same time, I also realize, you know, from being responsible to a board before, the emergency management side, was that, hey, I want this newest, coolest tool, but is it going to garner the support to continue to do the other things that I want to and need to be able to do? And so everything's a balancing act.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm not anti-admin either. You know, in Big Bo and I are very fortunate because we're lucky to have an admin that is super behind the department and listens to the department from,
yeah, they do for sure.
From the point of when we had a new chief, we had a transition of command about 2 years ago. And when that chief came in, he came in from Dallas Police Department, and you know, so he had a little bit different mindset. I came from an agency in Dallas also, and you know, way different experiences from what most of the people at our department were used to. But what was nice was, is he showed support immediately by saying, hey, listen, not only are we going to get you guys the equipment that you've been sorely lacking, but it's yours. What do you want? How do you want your cars to look? How do you want your patches to look? How do you want your badges to look? Y'all design them. And that support's awesome. But what I see in our, you know, in sister agencies and other agencies around is that it's not like that. And that it's very much still the status quo of, hey, look, this is back to the old saying. This is the way this is the way we've always done it. And it's the way we're going to continue to do it. But not adapting to that threat environment. And where I see admin failing on a larger scale is that they're not coming in and saying, okay, this is what the reality of the world is. This is what the reality of our possible, you know, or what we could possibly face, and we're going to equip ourselves for that. It's, no, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to sacrifice. I'm willing to make that decision to sacrifice personal safety in order to make a certain group of people feel better about things, instead of standing up and saying, no, this is what I need, or this is what we need, or this is what we're going to do, or this is how we're going to do it, and then articulating it in a way that relates to a common understanding.
Right. Yeah. And on the other side of that, you know, I'll call out our fellow line brothers.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That was next.
A lot of times, you know, I assist a lot of departments in implementing red dot pistol policies.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with probably 30 guys, you know, 30 guys across departments right now nationwide, to work through the approval process, the training process, the policy process. And a lot of times we just kind of sit back and complain to each other.
Yeah.
And think that we identified an issue and the admin knows what that issue is and they're just ignoring it.
Yeah.
You know, or this idea that, they'll never go for that. They'll just say no. But then we don't actually try to do anything to move that idea forward.
Right.
Yeah. We kind of fall into this trap or this, you know, this excuse that it's easier to just blame admin and the lack of progress on the fact that the boss isn't sending this down.
Well, let's be honest,
pushing things up.
Let's be honest though. Cops are world-class bitchers and we like to bitch about stuff.
Yeah.
And we need stuff to bitch about stuff. We have to.
True.
The way we are.
True. But the thing is that the moment that you inundate your bosses with information and give them a valid presentation on why you need XYZ,
right,
and they say no, you've now given your bitch validity.
Yeah, I agree.
And so you can go door to door in that station and be sound in your bitching.
Yeah,
because there's nothing that anybody can say.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's you know, all these every program that's instituted, every cop's like, oh, this is bull. This is ridiculous. Blah blah blah. But then they don't put anything in it to see if it's going to fail or not, so that it can fall back on that boss. No, and I get all the time, you know, oh, well, we'd never get red dots allowed. Cool, bro. Hey, what information have you given to your boss about it? Well, he'd just say no. Cool. So what information have you given your boss about it? Like it exists. It's out there. It's for free. Like, no. Well, he'd never go for it. Cool. Well, you've now lost your ability to bitch about this because you have not given your boss the opportunity to invoke the, this is how we've always done it. No, we're not going to do that.
Right.
I mean, and that's all there is to it. In everything that we complain about. Oh, you know, I didn't get this. We don't have that. Cool. Have you done anything for it? Have you reached out to anybody who said, hey, have you gotten this approved ever? Yeah. Hey, how'd you do it? Let me give it a shot. And then once the boss says, no, look, man, then I'm on board. I'm 100% on board.
Yeah, bitch
to,
away.
To MF the bosses.
Bitch away.
But until then, you're complaining just simply to complain. You're saying words.
Right.
Also, the idea that, you know, you go to the boss, you're like, hey, we want external carriers. No. Damn, boss said no.
That sucks.
Okay. You just came to him and said, we want external carriers.
But didn't give any reason why.
And then that's it. Yeah. Like, who are you convincing with that? Like, when Joe Dirtbag on the street gives you like a one-line response with no depth to the answer, you don't buy into what he's saying either. But then we talk to our bosses and expect something different.
Sure.
It's like, oh, here comes Joe again. He wants pants with a bunch of pockets. All right, that's get out of here.
Yeah.
That's going to cost more money.
A damn, you know, hippie.
Instead of, hey, man, hey, boss, you know, hey, we really need pants with extra pockets, cargo pockets. You know, we're carrying medical gear now. I've got my tourniquet. I've got my bandage. I've got my gloves. You know, I've got an extra flashlight now. Right. You know, you want me carrying, you know, an extra notepad or whatnot for street contacts, because now we have to fill out an extra piece of paperwork every time we stop somebody. I don't have anywhere to put it, boss.
Right.
I can't just shove it all into my waistband. It's starting to hurt my back, all of that information. And then let them say no. You can only fail by giving information and having them say no. Doing nothing is a failure on your part. Presenting information and having it accurate, good information, and having it denied is a failure of your administration.
Sure.
And so it's your decision who's going to fail.
Yeah. Because
at the end of the day, you're the one who has to do it.
Well, in that,
your boss may or may not be there when it goes down. And so if you haven't put yourself in the best position that you can possibly be in, then can you really blame the boss?
No, I don't think you can. I don't think you can. But you know what? It brings up a valid point because, you know, I bring up the issue of cargo pockets. You know, when we first brought our new chief on board at our agency, you know, those weren't on the new approved uniform list, you know, and it was a simple conversation of that I had with him was like, hey, listen, you know, hey, we're carrying more stuff. And honestly, it'd be a morale booster to be able to have that because all these other agencies have it. And, you know, it's, you know, and kind of went down that line of justification. He was just like, okay, cool. Done. Boom.
Yeah.
And then it came the same thing with the
tattoos,
with the tattoos. Exactly. It was like, hey, this would be a huge morale booster, and you know, this agency and this agency and this agency.
And I did exactly what you talked about, because I presented the tattoo policy. Like, I sat down, did homework, and brought numbers to him, and was like, these are the retention numbers.
Well,
these
are some recruitment numbers. And wrote a policy.
Yeah, and wrote a policy for it, and said, here's how the policy will look. Here's everything that I think that you'll be okay with. And I presented it to him and gave it to him in a folder and everything, like you would present a business model.
Yeah.
And he was just like blown away. He was like, holy crap. And he almost like couldn't say no. He was like, this is so well put together that I almost can't say no to it. And it was
impossible for him to say no.
Exactly.
Right. And let's be clear. There are bosses out there that are just going to say no.
Oh sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and that's all there is to it.
I mean, he just said no to the beer.
Hard line. No, you know, those bosses where it's like, hey, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Nothing's ever going to change. I get that. I totally understand, you know, larger departments where you're, you know, 500 plus man departments. You're a small wheel in the cog, but there's probably some process. There's likely some officer advisory council, something that's set up. I'm talking your smaller person, you know, your smaller departments where it's kind of on you to bring things up to your bosses and your admin. in order to affect that sort of change. And I think it goes with everything. It goes with equipment, and I think it goes with training as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's kind of the next thing I wanted to kind of delve into was, looking at what is implemented and what is considered acceptable as training, and I'm going to put air quotes on that, from an agency perspective and agency programs. Now, mind you, there are some agencies out there that have amazing training programs. Unbelievable.
Yep.
And we have quite a few in our area that have unbelievable firearms training programs, defensive tactics programs, et cetera, but they're the minority. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely,
when you look at agency training versus going to a Scott Jedlinski or a Bill Blowers or a Jared Reston, mm-hmm, or an Aaron Cowan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you can go down the list. In your opinion, where are agencies failing police officers when it comes to that?
Well, that's a very timely question to answer, as I just got done assisting Scott Jedlinski. He actually just left my home this morning at a class in McHenry here in Illinois, as I assist Modern Samurai Project occasionally whenever he comes to the Midwest, and now at Ohio Tactical Officers Association again.
Shout out to Jedi.
I think the Jedi, indeed, a great, great friend of mine. The difference is that in law enforcement training, as a trainer, as admin, we're checking boxes.
Yep.
In that, okay, here's what we need to accomplish today. And the accomplishment isn't performance-based.
No.
It's not that, okay, we need to see individual progression within this drill, within this specific task. It's we need to do A, B, C, and D. Let's get it done as quickly as possible with the least amount of rounds possible and the least amount of bitching possible.
Right.
The biggest difference, being a civilian and a law enforcement firearms trainer is that, first of all, it's a bit of a student difference in that when you're there for your department, you're there because you have to be there.
Right.
And because you're assigned to be there versus civilian training where you're there because you want to be there.
Yeah.
You've paid your own money. You've taken your own time. You can see it with cops that you see in open enrollment classes. They're using their money that they earn. A lot of the guys are on vacation time or using some sort of leave, or they're just taking their days off from the job to go shoot when they shouldn't really have to be spending their money and their personal time doing something that is a skill set within their own job.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's a checkbox that we're checking, and it's training to time versus training to task. Recently I started assisting training one of the SWAT teams on the south side of Chicago, and I was talking to one of their lead firearms instructors, who's a real good friend of mine, and he asked me in the beginning of the year to run a pistol, just a diagnostic fundamental class for them. He made the comment, we talked for probably about 2 hours about firearms training just in general. And he made the assertion that they probably pull the trigger about 3,000 times a year in training, but they don't really get better.
Right.
In that we got this, 8.5 by 11 inch box, shoot five rounds in there while you're moving. Yeah, hit the box, boom, check, that drill is done.
Now, are you talking 3,000 rounds as an agency, as a total, or per officer?
As a team, like, because these are SWAT team guys who are training twice a month. Right. Yeah. Twice a month, their team week, and so this is a team, a SWAT team, and so this is even more advanced as far as firearms than just your average patrol officer,
right,
on a department. So we were looking at a SWAT team where it was like, hey, are we getting better? Or are we just pulling the trigger?
Yeah.
And when we looked at it, it was like, I thought about it within our own team, and it was like, man, that's a good question, man. Like, I'm not 100% sure. I think we may just be pulling the trigger and saying, all right, we checked the box that we can hit that. but we're not seeing any actual improvement. So if that's SWOT, where we already have a higher standard to begin with, we take that step back to your average patrol officer who already has a much lower standard assigned to them, which with a much, much lower, you know, round count per year.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That they're shooting. And it becomes even more important to actually have a structured program to gain performance,
right,
rather than just check off that you have the median proficiencies, maybe even that.
Maybe.
I mean, I can tell you, our state qual is a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. That's all there is to it. If you think otherwise, then you need to get better shooting. I'm not gonna feel bad about it.
Yeah, and here in Texas, it's you have a minimum passing, you know, percentage rate. It's
pass, right? Fail.
Or you can have a pass fail program, but it's really up to the agency how that is worked out. You know what I mean? Yep. There's no that, you know, our regulatory agency, TCOL, they have an example they can provide you of, like, hey, this is kind of a minimum standard sort of deal or an accepted norm, but your agency can torque it however you want to, as long as it falls within these certain parameters of pass fail rates, which I like.
Same here. Yep. Illinois is the same way. My department, we have a much more difficult qual. I would say that we have a very challenging qual as it relates to other departments and definitely the state qual. Illinois is the same way, where you have your bare minimum standard that the Law Enforcement Training Standards Bureau puts out. And then it's up to agencies to change it if they like. And I'm very fortunate that we do.
You can add to, you just can't take
away. We have our own range at our department. We do quarterly training. Every quarter, we're doing something.
That's awesome.
But I can say, and again, we're fortunate that we have our own range.
Yes. Yeah, very fortunate.
And firearms instructors on all that, where we can go upstairs and shoot. So which actually kind of leads me to another point, in that departments that don't have their own range need to be even more careful that their firearms program is an actual firearms program, because that time with those officers is so much more precious for building skills and confidence with their weapon systems that they're using,
right,
than other departments who have access to that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we're always worried about what time we're going to cut out for lunch and how long lunch is and what time we're going to get done for the day.
Or my feet are sore.
Two times that year that you may shoot.
Yeah.
And part of that is the qual, that we're checking that box. And then what are we doing with the rest of that time?
Right.
You know, are we just okay, get our guns out. All right, we got to shoot 200 rounds today because we say that we shoot 200 rounds. A year. And then we get stuck with things like, you know, all right, well, you go down the line and have an issue and you say, well, just do what works for you. If we could light that statement on fire and just launch it off this planet, I think that we would all become better shooters and better instructors, because I think it's an easy out answer that law enforcement instructors use to kind of just push through the training.
Sure.
Well, if that's what works for you. Well, did that give them the best performance? Is there something that we could change? Can we do some one-on-one time? Can we do some just general diagnostic things? Can we pull out a B8 and shoot for some scores and diagnose some problems and make some corrections and see if that actually improves performance and then change the way somebody shoots instead of just throwing a bunch of rounds down there and hoping that the third time you try to qual, you're going to hit the paper enough.
Right.
I like this idea that, you didn't qual. All right, shoot it again. What?
Yeah. But shoot it again with what? What behind?
Shoot it again?
Yeah.
What's going to happen different? You know, are your fundamentals of shooting all of a sudden going to improve? You know, are we instructing here, or are we just holding a clipboard?
Right.
You know, and I think, so you guys said that you got some great firearms programs with some great instructors. Question for you guys. Are those instructors, do they also own training companies, or do they do training outside of their departments?
Not currently.
Not currently?
Yeah.
You think they will?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
I'm one of them. So, yeah,
So, perfect example. I think there's also this difference between police instructors, law enforcement instructors, who are law enforcement firearms instructors, and real instructors.
Right.
And I don't mean that negatively. I don't mean it as a bash against law enforcement instructors. I am one.
Right.
But I think when you look at these programs that are really, really good, it's because the guys are more concerned about performance and changing the officer than checking the boxes what needs to be done administratively.
Right.
And they're concerned about fundamentals. They're concerned about weapons handling.
Right.
I think that's really one of the places where we need more concentration on, is because
Absolutely.
There's a lot of times that we have our guns out that we're not shooting anybody.
Right.
And then we go out of the range.
And more importantly,
you can have your gun out.
And more importantly, to caveat off that is not just have when you have your gun out, but when to have your gun out.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's something that's heavily lost. Now, in basically building our firearms training program, it's been baby steps, and it's been, and I've had to edit myself. I've had to hold myself back because of, my experience in the past in taking classes from outside sources, and then building my own curriculum as an instructor, and then having to, introduce new concepts.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of saying it. Introducing.
Yeah, what are new concepts to the individuals that are making the decisions on approval or denial for these things? I've had to hold myself back in implementing baby steps because you're dealing with unfamiliar territory, and I have to take a step back and take my ego out of it and be like, okay, yeah, this is new to people, so it's going to be, I can't just shock and awe them with everything. I can't just throw a bunch of stuff on them, and that's been the goal, and we've been able to go from zero training days a year and just annual qualifications to one training day a year plus qualifications, and now moving into two training days a year, and it's increasing over time. And it's been implementing baby steps and implementing new concepts. We just did one 2-day course, and there were numerous drills and making adjustments where needed to be for people, and it was crazy how the response from certain individuals was like super enthusiastic, because it was like, oh, wow. Oh, that's all I had to do. I just had to make that little change, and it's making those adjustments, taking the time individually and, working with individuals to be better shooters, to be more accurate shooters, and then to introduce stress into that through drills and things. And it's been a process for me. And that's the eventual goal eventually is to have my own, little thing on this on outside of law enforcement. And I look at it like I'm kind of building my instructor resume and getting better myself and getting more experience myself and learning different teaching concepts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to make myself better before I start delving into that outside world. Does that make sense?
I think you hit a phrase that I think is important to key in on that you said that was a natural statement for you that may not be present in all firearms programs, is firearms curriculum.
Yeah.
Just simply when you look at certain departments, or when I see certain departments, and what's your range plan? Well, we're gonna go do this. Well, cool. How does that build on anything? And
right.
And I think there are some departments that don't have a true firearms curriculum. And again, it goes back to what requirements do we have to satisfy for training, or what we say we're going to give our officers.
Sure.
And it's not a truly comprehensive program. There's no building on it. There's no introduction of new skill. There's no one-on-one time or correctional time built into what needs to be done, because they're trying to satisfy a requirement. And then you have officers, and one of the things, the difference between a firearms curriculum, a firearms program, and just going in and shooting,
mm-hmm.
is that you have officers who, the firearms day is the most dreaded day of the year.
For some, yeah, absolutely.
They don't like it. They don't shoot well. They don't perform well. And so they want to go in, do the bare minimum, and get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But the more that you switch to a firearms curriculum, where you're building skills, where you're making corrections, where you're looking at the fundamentals, and officers see improvement in their performance throughout the day, it alleviates that.
Right.
It gives them more confidence. They qual right away the first time.
Right.
Instead of normally being a first time no qual, And then it allows you to branch out and do more, possibly with less time. You know, I think there's something to be said about it. I understand that there's minimum time. Budgets, the first thing to go is always training, right?
Right.
It's the first thing to go. So we're always forced to do more with less. So why aren't we doing just a pure fundamental step?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're going to run 50 drills that 40% of people don't even meet an average standard to say that we did the day, shoot a qual that 20% may have to shoot twice, where we could have spent that day, doing just fundamentals.
It's like a warm up
of things. And then all of a sudden everybody's first time quals or then you put a couple of drills in there, but after you've done, you know, some basic refresher stuff, because we could all use that anyway.
Of course, everybody can.
You know, nothing gets lost in those sort of things, because you can always change a little bit of something. You can always work on that higher grip. You can always, you know, relax those elbows a little bit more, work on your stance.
Yep.
There's always something to be done within yourself that is just building up those, I guess, lower level shooters. And right. Then you run your drills. They run the drills with more confidence. They see that there's a direct correlation between the fundamental changes that were done and the skills changes that were done, and it ends the day on a first time qual, leaving that person then set up for the next time that they do firearms, right, where they say, hey, you know, this day was a lot easier when I made these changes. Maybe I should probably work on a couple of those things.
Yeah, and
between
that's
now and then.
Yeah, and for instance, you know, in speaking all into that, you know, this most recent training block that we did. I designed the program to where everybody started up with a basic warm-up accuracy drill, and it really gave people an idea.
I killed it.
Of where they you did not I of so where did. They currently are, right? Where they are, just in pulling a gun out, pointing at a target, and shooting. It really was kind of an eye opener of where people were, but I didn't do it in a confrontational way. I was like, hey, listen, this is what we got to work on. And so then behind that were a series of drills and taking the time to make corrections along making corrections along the line in order to help. And then qualifications, our annual qualifications actually came after those drills, and we did them in blocks: pistol, shotgun, rifle, and then there were some medical drills, et cetera, and transition drills, et cetera. But by the end of the day, qualifications were aced, which in the past that hasn't been the case, first time. And people left there enthusiastic, excited, you know, like, best training I've ever had is a comment I got quite a bit. And it wasn't anything complicated. It wasn't anything, there were no real advanced concepts incorporated into it. It was real basic stuff, but it was presented in a way where the information was absorbed and the individual time was taken with students to ensure that they were doing the proper things and getting more comfortable. And for me as an instructor, that's the biggest thing. If they can walk away from that excited about the next time, excited about what they're going to learn the next time, and feeling good about what they did that day, mission accomplished.
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at any training day, any training plan day, and you just simply ask yourself the question when you look at it, how do we accomplish making them better and more confident in what they're doing?
Right.
If that's there, if there's a plan to do that, then I think that you've accomplished that day.
Right.
Even if it's a little thing, because sure, we've all been to plenty of training days where I'm like, where you're like, well, that was 8 hours of pay.
Yep. Yeah, like, absolutely.
And you've barely even confirmed any knowledge that you already had.
Right.
You definitely didn't get better. And it didn't do anything for your confidence. And I think that relates to any training that you're going to do, not just firearms. I think law enforcement instructors in general need to look at that, because that, I think that's one of the big differences between being a law enforcement instructor and a civilian instructor. Is that as a civilian instructor, as the owner of Tactically Sound Training Center, if you come to me for a firearms training, mm-hmm, there is the expectation that I make you better.
Right.
In some facet, you should walk away better. Whether you're taking a pistol class with me, whether you're taking a medical class with me, you should walk away with a new consideration of something and be better at least one thing.
Sure.
Because you're giving me your money.
Right.
And so you expect that. As an instructor, I need to look at my curriculum and say, how can I make everybody here a little bit better? Because I'm taking their money.
Yeah.
And so I think it works both ways, you know, in that sense of things, is that the expectation of the student and then the realities and the ethics of being an instructor. And I think you look at the law enforcement side of the house and you remove the fact that somebody's giving you money. And it's easy to disconnect yourself as a trainer because it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm a firearms trainer. They just want me to get this done.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to get this done because the department's paying you.
Again, to check off boxes.
Paid to do there.
Yeah. Again, to so check off boxes. So it's easy to
say, you know, whatever, let's just get this over with.
Right.
And so I think there's some instructional change that we need to be doing as well, as far as the mindset of those sort of things goes, is that there's an expectation of you as an instructor that you not just fill the instructional block for the day, but that you make the cops around you better.
Sure.
And when you look at the good firearms programs, one of the other problems that we have, I think, is that, you know, everybody's trying to do more with less.
Yeah.
You guys are right. That's not just us.
No,
right?
No, that's everybody, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's a nationwide theme. And so I think that you look at some of the choices in instructors and some sort of things, and in the law enforcement side of the house, we don't always have the best qualified candidate as the instructor.
That is true.
It may not be the person with the most experience.
Right.
And whereas on the civilian side of the house, if you're going to somebody's class, it's because you believe that they have the background to present the best information to you.
Right.
I'm not gonna go give my money to a guy who just picked up a pistol for the first time, you know, 3 years ago,
right,
and hasn't really studied under anybody. I mean, if you've got an impressive track record, you know, of training and competition and a good mix of things, that gives me the warm and fuzzy, I will. But when you look at, you know, some of these three-year police officers who are being asked to be instructors because nobody else wanted to do it.
Right.
Or manpower worked out that they were available to go to this instructor course.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a little bit of a disservice done just simply by that, is that we're giving younger officers empowerment to be an instructor without the actual background knowledge and passion to do what they need to do as an instructor. It's somebody's fault. I don't really know who's.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of guys who want to go to a bunch of instructor schools and get a bunch of instructor certs and say that they're instructors, instructors and a whole bunch of things, and wear the pin or wear the patch or put it on the resume or put it on their Instagram or Facebook profile, that then don't turn around and give any quality content out there. But they'll say, I've been a law enforcement firearms instructor for 6 years. Cool story, bro. I know what my state qual looks like, and we're only required to shoot it, I think, once a year. So if you're in a department where your firearms training is shooting the qual once a year, you've watched your department shoot 30 rounds a year.
Yeah, but, you know, to be a good instructor, you got to be a good student, too.
Yeah.
And you can't – I mean, I can go to – you know, I've got a million certifications. I mean, that's cool. I've got instructor this, instructor that, instructor this, instructor that, and more coming. And it's – you know, you look at my resume and on paper, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, that means shit, because if I'm not gathering knowledge from other people and learning from other instructors on how they do things and gathering new knowledge and constantly researching things and looking at things, to me, I'm not an effective instructor.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look at the difference between LE and the civilian instructor and what's put out there, is like, you look at my LE side and it's like, I can teach like 20 things.
Yeah.
And then you look at my company and it's like, I teach TECC medical and I teach Red Dot pistol.
Yeah.
That's the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
because I can't ethically take your money to teach you something else because I don't have that level of knowledge in it. I don't have that level of passion for it. But then on a department, not my department, we're really good about our instructors having the passion for the things that they do.
Sure.
But if I were on a department where it's like, all right, well, you're certified in 20 things, it'll be like, all right, well, today you're teaching taser because you're a taser instructor.
Right.
I could care less about a taser, but okay, we'll check the blocks.
Right.
And so they're not, nobody's walking away better that day. Well, I'll give you a perfect example. On the civilian side of things, every once in a while, I get asked to teach basic first aid because I'm an admin actually instructor. And I always try to talk everybody out of it because I don't like teaching it. I don't have a lot of passion for it.
Sure.
I would rather be teaching stop the bleed. I would rather be teaching, you know, a TECC first care provider, because I just think the basic first aid is too outdated.
Sure.
And so when I teach it, it's normally a combo CPR, AED, which I think has mass importance for everybody, and then basic first aid. And there's an absolute difference between the block that I'm teaching CPR, AED, and then the moment that we transition into basic first aid, because I semi kind of check out on it.
Sure.
And until we get to the parts of basic first aid that are your more stop the bleed, TECC sort of things that people need to know how to do. And then there's an ebb and flow of what I'm teaching.
Right.
And so, you know, on the law enforcement side of things, you could get told to teach something for the day that you don't care about at all.
I've been there.
You're the only person who's a certified instructor in it.
Yeah.
So guess what, homie? You got to check this box because our standard says so. So you're stuck doing it.
Oh, and I've been there too. And I'm sure it was horrible from a receiving end of, from a user end of it. I'm sure it was terrible, but, you know, so last thing, if we have a lot of cops listen to this show, from multiple countries, a lot of young cops listen to this show, and I'm sure there's several of them that have aspirations of being an instructor. What advice would you give them in past the whole point of just going to a basic school and getting those certifications? What advice would you have to be the best instructor that they could possibly be?
Being an instructor is not a piece of paper. It's not a patch. It's the same thing as being a cop. I think that there's a lot of cops out there right now, new cops, old cops, new instructors, old instructors, who are putting a costume on.
Yeah.
It's only skin deep, and they don't truly know what their content is. Mm-hmm. They don't truly know what their job is.
Right.
It's more important for them to be an instructor than it is to truly be an expert in what they're teaching.
Sure.
And it's an ongoing process. I think that if you have a desire to be an instructor in something before you even get to an instructor level school on it, I think you should already have a pretty good grasp of the subject matter or the content that you wish to instruct.
Right.
Because once you're the instructor and you're standing up there, or once you're the cop and you put the costume on, you better have knowledge past skin deep. You better be able to handle questions from senior officers and have the confidence that you know what you're talking about.
Sure.
Just the same as if you're a brand new cop, it's got to be more than a costume, because the first time you tell that guy, turn around, you're going to jail, and he says no.
what are you going to do?
What's next?
It better be more than you shined your badge that morning.
Right.
And your jacket says police, because it's not going to be good enough to just simply be, say, I'm the police.
Right.
And so the idea of this, I think that the gratification from being an instructor isn't being an instructor. It's not the instructor certification. It's not standing up in front of a class and saying, I'm an instructor. It's seeing performance improvements in your students.
Right.
It's getting that feedback after class that they implemented or initiated something that you taught them to save someone's life, or to more effectively do their job, or even just to say, hey, I got a better qual score the next time, or hey, I'm going into next training much more at ease than I would have beforehand.
Right.
I think it's kind of a philosophical thing inside your head. And so it's not really one tangible thing. It's just the idea that you need to have a passion for it and an understanding of what it is that you're going to teach, because it's not just about stacking up certifications. It's about truly knowing what you're doing. It's about making people better. And if you don't have the desire to actually make people better and to improve people's performance and to have that tangible ability to change someone whether it be in their mindset, in their qual score, in their ability to put on a tourniquet, interview somebody, a handcuff, arrest somebody, then I don't think you need to be an instructor.
Yeah,
it's cool to know stuff. Every guy in the department or every department has that guy or girl who knows a whole bunch of stuff, but isn't an instructor in anything. They just know a whole bunch of stuff. That's great, man. Every shift, every department needs that person.
Right.
If that's you, where you're just like, hey, I like a bunch of stuff. That's great. Know everything as possible about the job, but you don't necessarily have to be an instructor in everything. Pick that thing that you want to know. Pick that thing that you want to be. Pick that thing that you want to learn and be it. Be it all the time. Yeah. The worst thing that you can do is be an instructor and say something, and then somebody sees you out on the street and you're doing the opposite. You gotta believe in what you're teaching. You gotta believe in your curriculum. And if you don't, then maybe it's time to just say, hey, I don't think I want to be an instructor in this anymore. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree. So Jim, where can people find you? Where can they? What classes you got coming up?
Sure. So I own Tactically Sound Training Center here in Illinois. I'm based out of Elgin. I do medical. I'm a American Safety Health Institute trainer. So I do, CPR, first aid, mostly on contract stuff because there's a plethora of options out there everywhere you go for that. But I teach TECC. My company has approved educational content from the committee on TECC. And so I teach the civilian first care provider class, which I really do think should be the next basic first aid. I think that everybody should know those skills. Tourniquets, bandages, wound packing, chest seals, and carry it on your person. I go over in the class all those skills to the guidelines of civilian first care. We talk about how to carry equipment. I have a good partnership with Filster. John Haltman is a strong supporter of my company. I'm constantly talking to him about how we can make things better, how people can have equipment on them. Because if people can be doing medical things before I get there, and I get there and I don't have to do that part, and we don't have to do that part, there's a much greater chance of success.
Sure.
So I do TECC. I've got a class coming up November 25th out here in Bartlett, Illinois. Beginning of November, cool little thing. We have a Chicagoland store for 5-Eleven now.
Oh, wow.
Located in Downers Grove. Their manager reached out to me, went in there, which the last time he was here, said hello. They talked with me for a little bit. They liked what I do, my connection to the area. And so 5-Eleven Corporate is bringing me in to do one of their Always Be Ready Academy sessions.
Oh, that's cool.
On trauma care, It's going to be kind of a mini stop of bleed sort of thing. That'll be on November 1st at the Downers Grove store at 5-Eleven. That's free. You got a chance to win some swag out there. They put a whole thing on, and so you can check out the store. We'll do a little session. There will be some hands-on practice stuff that you'll be able to do and get a session from me. That should be pretty cool. I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a neat thing to do. And then I teach Red Dot Pistol stuff, working on getting some clinics up and going, get ready to go on vacation here in a couple weeks, actually in a week. So I don't have anything on the schedule yet for that, but in the near future, I will. I will say that for you law enforcement officers who are looking at RDS for your agency, you'll find, as you search or look over the internet and talk to other cops, I'm extremely accessible to assist any agency in implementing Red Dots. I have a presentation that I did at the ALEDA conference in St. Louis this previous year that was very well attended. And I've worked with multiple departments up to a major department in looking at the process of implementing red dot pistols in your firearms program and at your agency.
Yeah.
So you guys can hop on Facebook, Tactically Sound Training Center. I'm on Instagram as Tactically Sound, or my website is just tacticallysound.org.
Okay.
Reach out to me. I'm a resource for everybody on all of that stuff. To me, all of that knowledge is free. I got all that stuff from, guys like Aaron Cowan. I'm listed in his white paper as a contact source. Without that, I wouldn't have any of that information. Guys like Scott Jedlinski, Bill Blowers, Jared Reston, Chuck Pressburg, all those guys have been phenomenal sources of information to assist me in moving forward with the information that I give to departments. So that's all free. I'll help work with you guys. I answer emails, texts, basic messages all day long to help you guys through the process.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, Jim, we really appreciate you being on the show, man, and taking the time for us.
Guys.
Thanks a lot,
man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Stay safe.
Yes, sir. Bye.
All right, brother.
Boom, shock, baby.
So that was good.
I like that. It was real good.
Yeah. What's been going on with you, man?
School. School.
Yeah?
And school. It's so difficult.
I feel like people miss you.
They do miss me. I have people hit me up.
I don't miss you, but I feel like people miss you.
Well, I see you quite often. It's a little bit harder for you to miss me because you see me all the time. So with, you know, SRO comes school functions and school duties, so I've got that. And right. Then I've also have my own little family of sorts, which it's kind of been like hit or miss because my kids have football.
Yeah.
And since it's been really stormy lately, like we'll be like, oh yeah, we'll get ready in like 10 minutes driving to the game. They'll be like, game's canceled because of the storm. And I'm like, son of a... And then on top of that, I have assignments due every Sunday for my four classes that I'm taking so I can graduate in December.
Mm.
And that is very, very time consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. My girlfriend was just like, are you almost done with that? I mean, it shouldn't take you that long to write a 1,000-page paper. And I'm like, no, it doesn't take me very long to type 1,000 words.
Does she know that's how you imitate her voice?
I don't know if she does or not. She will if she listens to this. But I was like, no, it doesn't take me very long to write the 1,000 words. What takes the time is to actually read and research. Because like these teachers are pretty sneaky-deaky.
Right.
And they're like, oh, read chapters 8 through 9 or whatever. Okay, cool. And then like they'll be like, so how do you feel about body cams? And you need 4 academic references. And the textbook can't be one of them. And FYI, what you read in chapter 8 and chapter 9 has nothing to do with body cams.
Oh, nice.
So then I have to go and research through the library. The library. And
you college boy with your library.
I know, the library. So then I have to research through the online library. And then I have to find 4 articles are 4 journal entries that somebody else has written.
Yeah.
And then I have to read all those. And then I have to find key points to discuss from those articles to go with my theory. Mm. And then I have to reference all that in text and out of text. So, and then on top of that, I have to respond to someone else's theory. And then I have to research my response. So there's another 2 research articles I need to read to respond to them for 500 words, Alex.
That sounds
fantastic. And that's just one class.
Yeah.
And so, and I have 4 of them. So that it's very time consuming. And so I know I'm sorry I haven't been here very much. And trust me, I have one of my friends who's constantly like, you weren't on the podcast. I didn't even listen to it. I was like, well, that's a jerk move.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks.
That's horrible.
Who is that?
I'm not going to tell you.
Wow.
No, he's a horrible person, though.
Clearly.
Horrible person.
You either support it or you don't.
You don't. That's what
you
I tell him.
You can't just half-ass it.
He did. I did tell him, though, that he got pulled over recently, and I was like, dude, your civil rights totally got violated. And he was like, word? I was like, oh, yeah, they can't do that. That's illegal. And he was like, huh. Well, I plugged the podcast for you. I was like, oh, well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Well, everything they did was fine, then.
Everything they did was legit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was kind of cool. And what's funny is that he plugged it in Illinois too. So there
that's
was
good.
Some Chicago officers.
That's awesome.
Yep. So
yeah, those poor bastards up there though.
Yeah, the poor bastards. But yeah, man, really that's all I've been up to, man. I just took a picture and put it on my personal page the other day. That's what I was doing. And it was, you know, I don't even get to enjoy the Cowboys game because I'm working during the Cowboys game. So
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's just very difficult.
Conor McGregor.
I did. I saw my boy. He was out there. He was swagging.
Boy, they were clowning him big time for that
God,
throw.
He's such a loser.
I feel like that was more than just a proper whiskey deal.
Oh, man, it really was.
I feel like either the UFC is going to come there or he's setting up some kind of
boxing I think it was a proper whiskey deal, and I think he's going to sponsor something. But I will say he's got one more loss in the UFC before he's not as big a star as he thinks he is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because you just can't be losing like that.
No, and
he looked bad in that loss too.
He did some things that were impressive though. His ground game got a lot better.
But did it?
It did. No, it did. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
He got those footholds that Khabib had him in.
Yeah.
He got out of those.
He tried. Yeah, he definitely did his best.
He got up. He got out of the hold several times.
Yeah.
He didn't do what he needed to do. He should have warned Khabib out. He should have stayed on the outside. He should have pissed the crowd off.
You know, he should have dragged the fight on.
He should
have gone in for it. But yeah, he, you know, I mean, you're sitting there in those holds. I mean, you're going to get tired.
Oh yeah, oh for sure.
You're tired, and he doesn't have the best stamina in the world.
No, he doesn't. He's prone to getting tired, which I don't understand.
An amazing striker.
Which I don't understand. That's something you don't fix. But I will say this: there's a boxer by the name of Andre Ward, and he was talking about that stuff. That the things that you do outside of camp affect you in a fight too. So like, even though you're not training and preparing for a fight, and like you look at him, he's at a Cowboys game. He's clearly gained 40 pounds from when he fought because his face looks fuller, his suit's a little tighter.
Yeah.
You can tell he just does not. I'm not going to say he doesn't train outside of camps, mm-hmm. but you can tell he doesn't take care of himself like he should outside of camps. And I think that's part of his stamina problem.
And it, yeah, and it very well might be. It
yeah.
Just, you know, but I think that was apparent. I think, you know, yeah. like his coach, John Kavanaugh, I think he's yeah. fairly aware of it. He was on Joe Rogan the Monday after the fight.
Yeah. Yep, he was.
And I think he was pretty honest about all that. I don't think Conor Khabib 2 is gonna happen though.
I do,
at least not anytime soon.
I think give it to the beginning. I believe it'll probably be one of the first fights of next year.
Well, a lot of people though have been saying that it's gonna be, you know, there's a good possibility of a McGregor Diaz 3.
But I think Khabib McGregor 2 is gonna get more buys.
It's gonna be the same results.
Not necessarily, because I don't think so. Because
you think McGregor can come back and win it?
Yeah, I think McGregor can come back. I believe that
he's going to have to change his strategy.
He will definitely have to change his strategy. He's going to have to go for the takedowns first. And I think if he starts doing that, that throws Khabib off, and then Khabib goes, you know what? Let's stand up.
Which would be a mistake. Which if he did that, a huge mistake.
Huge mistake. And I think that's what will happen, because that's what Conor did sort of for Nate Diaz too. He started trying to take Nate down, and Nate was like, you know what, I'm not going to keep stuffing these takedowns.
Well, then he was just eating strikes after that,
though. Yeah, and then he started eating fists.
And what Conor wants you to do, you notice when Conor kind of dances around you a little bit?
Yeah.
And he keeps his arms down because he's looking for that counter punch. He
exactly.
wants you to open yourself up so he can strike.
Exactly.
And he's one of the most effective strikers in that sport.
Yeah.
For
oh,
sure.
Speaking about sports, yes. The NBA starts tomorrow.
I know.
Who do your Mavs open up against?
I don't know.
Me neither. I don't know who the Suns open up against.
I haven't been paying attention.
Yeah,
like
me
all.
Neither.
I've so dropped off on all that.
But I'm going to pick it back up tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to pick it back up like way tomorrow. I mean, I do have an off-duty tomorrow. But
I think I'm going to invest in
the ticket? The league pass?
League pass, yeah.
Yeah, that was the most basketball I ever watched when I had a league pass.
Well, because
I
got away from cable.
Yeah.
And apparently, I guess you can buy the league pass and still watch.
Yes.
All you need is an internet
yes.
cable provider.
That's it.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We work so much, and then the podcast, hard. Yeah. I just haven't kept track of it like I should. I know that Dirk's coming off the bench.
He is.
Which is probably a good thing. But it's going to be weird for sure.
It will.
So, do you remember where to find us?
I do remember where to find us. So, where you're going to find us is on the website, first and foremost, streetwarriorradio.com. So you need to go to that, and then from there, if you want, we have all of our social media on there. And look, if you go on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all you have to do is put Street Warrior Radio in the search engine.
And Tumblr.
We're on Tumblr now,
too?
Tumblr. Yikes.
Just to piss the SJWs off.
There you go. Boom. Yeah. So you just put Street Warrior Radio in the search bar. Boom. We'll pop up, man. You can find us there. We're also on Twitch now. So make sure you get a Twitch account. You can see all the episodes live. You can look at past episodes that we've done. You know, you can go back and watch them. We're also going to be putting this stuff on YouTube.
Yep.
You can find us on YouTube at Street Warrior Radio. And you can definitely find us anywhere that podcasts are streamed from. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Those are some good places. You can also go to the website, streetwarriorradio.com, again, plug that. And you can go to our RSF feed?
RSS.
RSS feed. And then we have all of our past episodes up there, too, where you can check it out, man. So that's where you can find us at. That's what... make sure you're liking, subscribing, sharing, following, tag your friends, everything.
Yep.
Yep.
Awesome.
I love it.
Any parting words?
Stay in school.
Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
just say no.
Just say no. Hugs. Up with hope, down with dope.
There you go.
Remember that.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Goddamn chicken in there. Goddamn cougar in the car.
And with that, I want to thank all of our military personnel around the world fighting for and defending our freedom and defending our beautiful republic. To our military, to our first responders, our police, fire, paramedics, thank you for what you do. Remember your oath. Go out there and do the right thing. To our families of our first responders and military, thank you for the sacrifices that you make, the support that you give. It is noted, it's appreciated, and not often talked about. And to everyone else out there, our fans, our supporters, followers, we love you. We thank you for everything that you've given us. The podcast continues to grow, and it continues to grow because of y'all. And yeah, we appreciate that. We appreciate that greatly. And everyone else out there makes the world go round. Yeah. Thank you. You make the sacrifice. You make the service worth it. And with that, Street Warrior Radio is out of service.